Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
House of the Dragon Season 1 Episode 8 is over, as well as Game of Thrones Season 1 Episode 8. I am not Josh Rigler. My name is Grapes. I am here on the Versus Podcast. I'm very excited. And alongside me is the usual co-host for this Versus Podcast, LaTanya Starks. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing great. I'm very excited for this episode discussion. I'm very excited to talk about this show with you, Grace, because we haven't done that yet.
Yeah, we're Valerian ships in the night. We don't see each other. Yeah, one of us is at the Stepstones, with the other one
exactly.
is at the Stepstones.
I'm always already at the Stepstones. It's just
triarchy.
A
oh, come yeah. on. Oh, so
damn
annoying.
Triarchy.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for our guest.
Yeah, well, speaking of a triarchy, we have a triarchy of our own. Ladies' Night here on the Versus Pod this week. We're delighted to be joined by Gia Worthy. Gia, how you doing?
I am doing so well. I said before the podcast that you two are two of my favorite podcasters, so I'm very excited to be joining you. I love a good competition, so this will be great. I even wore my finest onesie for this occasion. Oh. It is the Fenty brand. I must, humble brag, but this is a big occasion for me.
Yeah. Coming off of Canadian Thanksgiving here in Canada, so I'm very used to some tense family dinners as we get in the Lord of the Tides episode. Interestingly named. We were very, very curious about what that would mean. I thought it was a very fun episode. And we're going to also chat about the pointy end, the Game of Thrones episode. That is it the silliest name? I don't know if you and Josh rank silliest names of episodes, but I think the pointy end might win the whole thing.
The pointy end is very much up there in terms of why. why'd you name the episode that?
I mean, a lot of people get stabbed at the very beginning of that episode, but other than that, it's not, I don't know.
It's because of Arya.
Yeah, it is about Arya.
It's just because of Arya. And you stick them with the pointy end. That's Jon's advice in that's life right. and love.
Yeah. So I think a very fun two episodes to get to chat about and compare and contrast. I feel like we got all the content in the middle of two kings' deaths, because I believe Robert Baratheon died last episode in Game of Thrones, and Viserys dies at the end of this episode, between two kings. So we'll get into it. But in the meantime, Gia, this is your first time talking Game of Thrones here on Post Show Recap. So I'd be delighted to get your Game of Thrones and House of the Dragons history.
Oof, so thank you for asking. But so way back when I was young and naive and full of hope, I was too a avid Game of Thrones watcher. I probably started watching right before season 4 started airing. So that was in the times of when you had the on-demand with the big silver remote. And so I watched all of seasons 1 through 3 on one of my winter breaks. That's just what I did for the month. And then I watched season 4 as it was airing in real time. And I had a lot of friends that were also in the Game of Thrones fandom. So it just seemed to be a really good show to pair well with, like, getting to know people in college, and a great one to share about, like, what our fan theories were and things like that. So I have some fond memories of Game of Thrones. And then, like, so for full context, I am a big House Tyrell stan from Game of Thrones. Yeah. I loved them. No notes. Perfect little family there. Mm-hmm. But so obviously after season 5, my interest started to wane. But then even after, even with a couple things to still look forward to, I'm also a big Sansa fan. I feel like the last few seasons were not the things that I was excited for anyway. And then that final season was just unforgivable. So just very sad all around.
Yeah.
And I also read I read the first book, like a book and a half, but really the first book was the one that I, it's a very dense read, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? They're not all out. So who cares?
Back when I first read the first book, it seemed like there was going to be a possibility that the sixth book was finally going to start coming out. And, you know, here we are. So why rush?
Yeah, he's certainly not.
He's not. Yeah. He said in his blog this week, I'm on it. Don't worry about it. It's like, yeah, right.
I don't believe him.
Yeah. No one does.
Yes.
We've been tricked before.
Yeah, I'm with you in the Tyrell stand. And I do think there's like, you know, there's a little LGBTQ love. I think like we meet Loras, the Knight of Flowers, who's like a little gay knight. And then Marjorie's like, and also I'm kind of an ally. And you're like, okay, cool. This is a great house. Yeah. And then you get the Queen of Thorns. Like, she's amazing. So
great lines.
Yeah.
And Marjorie, fantastic gowns. Love the gowns.
In the LGBT community, we love an old queen. So I think the Queen of Thorns. I think that makes sense.
And during LGBTQ plus History Month, it's important that we remember these icons of our time.
Remember the Tyrells. No, they're of our time.
Yes.
I saw Marjorie the other day down at the store.
Oh, wow.
She's doing great. She faked her own death.
Wow, that's weird. I love that for any
LGBTQ.
But let's just, do you want to retcon all of Game of Thrones to all the LGBTQ characters or LGBTQ adjacent characters?
Yes.
They went off. They're living in Essos. They're
fine.
Exactly.
They're fine. They're hanging out with Laenor. Everything's okay.
It's all good. Yeah. All right. Well, I believe most people, hopefully you are keeping up with what happened in Lord of the Tides. We have many a podcast that detailed the events of the episode. But in case you are not actually watching the episodes of Game of Thrones as we are going along, let me give a little brief description of the pointy end. We start with the Red Keep under attack, specifically anybody associated with the Starks. They're under attack. They always are. Yeah, Latonya, yeah. Cyrio Forel fights off Meryn Trant. This is great. With a wooden sword, he fights off a bunch of the Kingsguard. So impressive. Letting Arya get away, although Arya does kill a little stable boy with Needle and flees. Varys visits Ned in the dungeons, claims that he doesn't work for anybody in particular. He works for the realm. Someone should. Up at the wall, there's some dead men who arrive. They bring them back, and later they are going to rise as White Walkers. Jon learns of his father's captures, thinks about fleeing, gets in an argument, has to be calmed down. Sansa pleads with Cersei that her father is innocent. Rob decides to send for the Northmen banners and earns the respect of Great John Umber, leaving Bran in charge of Winterfell. Catelyn learns that Rob has called for the banners. She asks for help from her sister, who is like, nah, I think I'm good. I think I'm just stay in the Eyrie and stay with my little boy, Robin. So annoying. So she heads to meet Rob. Tyrion bribes some of the hillsmen and brings them to the Lannister war camp. Khal Drogo sacks the city to pay for ships. And Daenerys wants the men to marry the women instead of keeping them as slaves, which upsets one of the warriors of Khal Drogo's clan. They fight. Khal Drogo does win, but he is wounded and is treated by a healer. And at the end of the episode, Sansa once again pleads with Cersei that her father is innocent. So that's the pointy end. Did I miss anything? Did I miss anything from the episode? Anything of importance?
Did you talk about the Hill Tribes people?
Yeah. Tyrion bribes them, says they can have all of the Eyrie if they come with him
all
to
of
the
it.
Lannister camp. Yeah.
Just giving up lands that he doesn't own.
Yeah, and Lannister always pays their debt, so I feel like he actually, in retrospect, he actually owes a bunch of hillsmen the Eyrie, I think, at the end of Game of Thrones.
Their story wasn't good enough, Grace. So
no, they don't. I kind of love all the hills, hill giants and all their...
Not a good enough story.
Yeah.
Personally, I would have loved a hillsman prequel as opposed to the Targaryen prequel, or maybe them coinciding with one another, but I suppose this is okay.
Yeah, what would it call? I know that the book is like called A Fire and Blood, and it's like you know, the show's House of the Dragon, like House of the Hills. Is that the book, like Mountains and Hills?
The hills have house,
fire and
the
blood.
Hills have eyes, the hills have swords and the Eyrie.
Mm-hmm. So that's the Game of Thrones episode. Let's let's dive into it. I mean, I feel like the big thing here is, I mean, we talked about that last episode, is the a downfall of Robert Baratheon. So this is Joffrey's first episode as king, and this is Viserys's last episode as king. And it feels like the headline of the week, all week, has been like, Paddy Constantine, he's going to get an Emmy. He's going to get an Emmy out of right. Lysa Tonya.
Yeah. You know, Paddy Considine has had some acting challenges to deal with. Mm-hmm. There's all the prosthetics. There's the extreme makeup, the wig that's barely there, just like a shift of hair. And then in this episode in particular, he is just so obviously, you know, in interviews, he said that he's suffering from some type of leprosy that is not catchable, apparently, but it's just a wasting disease of leprosy. I thought that all leprosy was catching, but
well, there's no book spoilers, but there are in Fire and Blood, the book, there are a few diseases that are like they name them something different, you know. Right, there's like the winter cough, I think, at some point comes up. So this could be like, they could be like hopefully they're not ever dealing with like COVID, but like, you know, they could have some variants, you know. So this is a leprosy variant, maybe. LT.
Okay, that makes sense. So yeah, he's dealing with a lot, and just that, you know, the triumphant walk that we'll get to, but the triumphant walk that he makes into the throne room and up to the throne, using all of his energy, surely depleting him to the point of death, you know, accelerating his death, is something that is very amazing to behold. And the score is all swelling, and you know, he gets that assistance from Damon, and it's just amazing. I think what Paddy Considine does here and has done all season has really been to endear us to Viserys in a way that I didn't foresee happening. I kind of thought this guy was a bit of an asshole and a clown to begin with, and that Rhaenys should have been on the throne. And how much better would, you know, King's Landing and the Seven Kingdoms have been if Rhaenys was in charge? But slowly over the course of the season, you just realize that this is a man who wants his family to get along, and he just wants to, you know, sit and look at the boys train and have everyone be happy. And he's suffering relatively silently with this illness. He doesn't complain or anything. He's just, you know, you just know that he's in a lot of pain and that he's suffering. And it's obvious that he's wasting away. So yeah, an Emmy for Paddy. Why not?
First, before I comment on a lot of that, I do think, I wonder, has anybody done like a mashup of like putting like Sissy That Walked by RuPaul and like having RuPaul like with the binoculars, like looking at Paddy Considine, like Viserys, like coming down the, when he does his grand entrance? That somebody should probably just make that happen for me, please. That would be great. But there's
I co-sign this request. Yeah.
Agreed. But gee, there's a lot of talk this week, especially in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord. There's a lot of talk about whether Viserys was a good king or not. And I think Rob, hot take. He said this is the worst king he's ever seen in Game of Thrones history. I know. That's a hot take.
That's the hottest of takes.
That might be a little too hot for me.
House of the Dragon here, but too hot of a take. But I think that there's this discussion about like, he reigns over peace, but obviously leaves his house on verge of a civil war, Aegea. And how good of a king can you have been if, despite for your entire reign, feels like a little bit of a technicality to be like, but there was peace my entire reign, and then civil war ensuing in the aftermath, Gia.
So, I mean, I feel like personally, like, he's not the worst king. Like, let's be real. We had a lot of crazies in Game of Thrones, and
we just get introduced to our new king Joffrey Baratheon.
yeah How can you say that he's the worst king when Joffrey's on the board?
In the same like placement, same season one, episode eight. Rob, just I think the time has passed that the effect of Joffrey has kind of worn off, respectfully to Sir Rob.
This is what happens to past president. This is what happened to past presidents down there. They'd be like, oh, George W. Bush, I don't know if he was that bad.
Yeah, he wasn't that bad, right? So I just don't feel like that might be a little too strong, but I do think that there is something to be said about like the importance of not just ruling during a good time to be king. Like, yeah, it was a good time to be king when Viserys started his reign. But then, like, the importance of maintaining what you have going for you. And in that end, he failed to do it. But, like, is he one of the more intriguing characters? And would I have liked to see him a little longer? Yes, but that's not the show that we get, unfortunately. So I would say not a great king, but definitely not the worst king. But, you know, the bar is in hell at that point.
That's yeah. true. I think that there's a very interesting, like, multiverse where this show doesn't do as much, like, they don't hire the younger actors, and the amount of time that Viserys ends up on the screen, I think, would end up being less in that thing. I'm really glad that they have extended. I know that some people were kind of hoping that this first season, like, that a lot of this could have been extended even more. Like, you take those first actors and those are the actors for season one, and then you bring in the aged up actors for season two, and just let it breathe to a degree. That it's funny because I think people say this about Game of Thrones, that it really let it breathe. I think the big difference here is that, and interestingly, we are sort of in very similar positions coming into this episode or ending this episode, where in the Game of Thrones episode, this is sort of the sacking of King's Landing, getting removing all the Starks on the board. And interestingly, like, Viserys is trying in his last, you know, moment of life, Lytanya, to bring everyone together, bring his family together, whereas Ned Stark is seeing his family disperse and spread out, and everyone's being moved all over the board. They're further than ever, I guess, other than Catelyn and Rob, right. And even then, Rob is, like, you know, leaving Winterfell. So, very interesting episode that in one you have sort of like the coming together of a family, and the other episode you have the falling apart of the spreading apart of a family.
Yes, and both with the same goal in mind, which is to stay alive, to keep these people alive for as long as possible. You know, there's the retention of power when it comes to bringing the family together, specifically for House of the Dragon, trying to make sure there's a peaceful transition to Rhaenyra from Viserys. But, you know, obviously that's not going to happen because Viserys, you know, high on Mocha the Poppy, mistakes his wife for his daughter. Which at some point, and I want to talk about this later, at some point you have to kind of question Alicent and why she would instantly think, I get that there are too many people named Aegon, just generally. But why, how self-involved do you have to be to instantly think that, you know, your husband on his deathbed is talking after having very publicly said to everyone that Rhaenyra is the heir, this is settled yet again, that he's just going to say, it's our son who should actually be on the Iron Throne. You're the one who has to do this, especially given that the context of this is, remember our conversation from earlier. And there's no earlier conversation that he had with Alicent. But yeah, you're very much right that In Game of Thrones, it's all about dispersing in order to get away and to flee trouble. In House of the Dragon, it's about coming together in order to stop trouble from happening. But we know that the second Viserys is gone, the second he takes his final breath, all hell is about to break loose. This is about the Targaryen Civil Wars.
I think it's worth stopping in on the Alicent prophecy stuff while we're here. Gia, I think that there's been an argument about, so, A, does this work as a TV show plot device? I know a lot of people critiquing it as sort of a sitcom miscommunication, like, you know, how you know, oh, it must have been about me. I think that there's an interesting read to be had that Alicent knows and understands that it's not about her, but now has this piece of information that she can use. I think that also, I think people are a little bit frustrated with this idea that there's going to be this conversation that's like, well, the war wouldn't have happened except for the fact that Alicent, like, misread the thing. When there's this other logic that says, like, well, look, as soon as Viserys leaves the dinner party, all the kids start fighting. And yes, Rhaenyra and Alicent have this look across the table after they've toasted each other and have this acknowledgement of each other that they were friends at one point, that Rhaenyra finally says, you know, Alicent, you were the one who stood by my father. You've sacrificed more than anything. And Alicent saying, yeah, well, you could be a good queen, Rhaenyra. You will make a good queen. What do you make of the miscommunication? Is Alicent you know, using this more to her advantage? Does she genuinely think that the prophecy is about her son?
I mean, let us not underestimate the over-religious crazies of the Game of Thrones world. Like, let us not underestimate the amount of damage that they can do, because I think there is something to be said about her genuinely believing, because of, like, what you said, LaTanya, about how self-involved she is, that she would think that, of course, his last breathing moments are going to be about preserving their family and the power within their family. And I think there is also a part that it is possible that a light bulb went off for her, like it almost like the final piece was put together of how this is how she can make this work in her favor, saying that her son is the son that is promised. And yeah, if I have to convince myself about that, then that is what's going to work. So I do think that there is something to say about that. Now, as someone that loves drama, I would also argue that while it does feel a little anticlimactic that this complete decimation of the dragon population that we know is coming resulted from like a sitcom level misunderstanding is like kind of humorous in like the grand scheme, like a show as serious as Game of Thrones is going to throw this spanner in the works. However, if you're someone that does take it the show very seriously, then it does feel a little like, wait, seriously? Like, this doesn't play into the world in the show that I know and like the level of creativity we know they can reach.
I think it's so interesting because the prophecy, I think when it came in, I think there was actually a lot of people who were very excited by that, that it had a layer to the show that even book readers didn't know was coming. And I think that it actually worked really well. I think for me, if I was doing a little bit of a rewrite on this misunderstanding thing, I think it almost works better. And I think it fits better with the theme of the show to just have Alicent learn about the prophecy, like Viserys tell her. And it doesn't actually really matter whether he tells her because he's like, because he thinks he's talking to Rhaenyra or he knows he's talking to Alicent or whatever. Like, he could almost do this thing of like, listen, the reason it can't be like, it's not Aegon, is because of this prophecy. And if you explain the prophecy, it does say the prince who was promised. So it does not say the princess who was promised. And I actually think that, you know, it's really hard. I actually think Rhaenyra's children being bastards, I think, adds this thing that does complicate it more. In a modern day setting, you can say, who cares if they're bastards? But in the context of the show, you can understand a little bit more. Like, it feels better than just basically, if you're not on Team Rhaenyra, it just seems incredibly sexist to be like, Rhaenyra can't be the queen, because that's the only difference, right? It's the firstborn daughter or the firstborn, it's firstborn child or the firstborn son. Right. And so I think as soon as the prophecy, the way it's written, I think that if Viserys says the prophecy and it says the prince who was promised must sit on the Iron Throne, then you can have Alicent say, well, it can't be Rhaenyra. It has to be my son, because it says the prince who was promised. And I think that there's something about that works a little bit more within the themes of the show than this misunderstanding that Alice sees. It doesn't bother me a ton. I was like in the moment, like, oh, fun. Like, that's how we're getting there a little bit more. Like, how we're going to like really cement that Alicent won't, like, even if she's not directly doing things, she's not going to stop anything from happening because she's heard about this prophecy. I'm a little with people a little bit that it's like, yeah, it feels a little hokey, it feels a little silly. But
two things.
Yeah,
the first is that we learn in maybe season 7 of Game of Thrones that in High Valyrian that it could be prince or princess that was promised, and you would think, given that these people are
closer
to High Valyrian, that they would know that that's the translation of it. And the second thing is, I think that the show has, and is, especially with this plot device, has been going out of its way to do as much as it can to make Alicent as sympathetic a character as possible. You know, they've tried to show us that that there are reasons behind why she does what she does and why she thinks what she thinks. from her, from them showing us her being taken advantage of essentially and sold off.
Well, this episode, as a child. This episode, the whole scene with Diana and then her scene with Aegon, where she's, you're no son of mine, right? Like, it's right. A very sympathetic, you know, as much as you can while also still having to keep her in the sort of corner that she's in.
I'm less sympathetic about that particular scene, if I'm being honest, because she's kind of speaking out of both sides of her mouth here. She's, you know, she's saying, oh, my dear little like piglet or whatever she calls her. Like, I believe you and I understand what happened, but don't you think other people might think that you're just the kind of girl who would allow that kind of thing or would have been making the overtures toward the prince to make him do this? And also, by the way, I've got my moon tea on call because obviously I've had to do this before. Like, I'm way less sympathetic toward Alicent, especially given what she's been through, that she does this. And I get that she says, you're no son of mine, but she's not holding her son accountable. In fact, she's trying to get him on the Iron Throne and she knows what he's capable of. Like, that makes it even worse.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great point. Yeah.
It's so the show is trying to do everything that they can to make us sympathize with Alicent. But to your point, it's just true that if you are Team Green, you are sexist. You don't believe that a woman should be in power.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Yeah, I think. Yeah. It feels like this is the most, we're getting much closer to, Cersei and Alicent. I've always being very similar. I've said this a lot that when I was reading through Fire and Blood, I was like, oh boy, George R. R. Martin really likes to have similar. He likes like history repeating itself to a degree. Mm. He likes this stuff. He likes Lannister twins, for example. Yeah. Many times there's like a small child always just happens to be running the Eyrie. Although Lisa Arryn is running, like Robin is really like the Lord of the Eyrie, right? Like he likes all these like little tropes that he throws in. And boy, it really does feel like Alicent is just gonna be by the end of this like Cersei 2.0.
Yes, to the point where they're, you know, when you watch the behind the scenes or any interviews with Olivia Cooke, she says that she auditioned with Cersei lines.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, to the point of the scenes we're just talking about in terms of Alicent having these scenes with Diana, and you know, and they're both like, you know, there's a little bit of humanity in there, which I'm not sure is there with Cersei. I mean, the first time we, you know, the end of the first episode when we meet Cersei, she's like sleeping with her brother already. But it is this like, there is this like ruthlessness to it underneath it. And that's what Cersei has in those scenes with Sansa. It feels like to me, Gia, when she's like, you know, you're a good girl, but like, you know, your father is a traitor, you know, like, I don't know, yeah. You know? Yeah.
And that's how the manipulation works, is that they know like this person in House of the Dragon, Diana, and in Game of Thrones, Sansa, that they're like looking for anything really to any semblance of comfort in those moments. And this happens to be the person that they're getting any type of understanding from, who happen to be very manipulative. Women that, in this case, women that know how to, you know, use their identities to their advantage and to use their power to their advantage. And it makes them really compelling characters, but you can just really see the trajectory that this means for Alicent in the future, for however long House of the Dragon goes for.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the other big, pull from this episode is that Aemon is awful, but he looks cool. I felt that. I thought Aemon is my favorite Targaryen. And again, I say this very much in like pro wrestling terms of like, yeah, he's a bad guy. But like, there's a lot, you know, he conquered Vhagar. He's cool. The dinner scene, it's tense between Aegon and Aemon and Jace and Luke. And also now we have Rhaena and Baela. They're engaged. We'll get to, I think, the Rhaenyra and Rhaena scene. And I love that they just were like, We should probably have Rhaenys and Rhaenyra and Rhaena all in the scene together at once, because that won't be confusing for the audience. we basically like end this the family scene, the dinner scene. Once Viserys goes to bed, it's all this the toasts continue between Aemon and Aegon fills up one of the twins' cups, talks about like, I'm sorry you're going to be so disappointed. Jace responds by wanting to dance with Helaena. What do you think? What do you think of all the kids? Because we've talked a lot about, I feel like the central characters thus far have been sort of the adults in the room now that they are adults. But we have a whole second generation here, LaTanya.
Yeah. One of the things that the time jump does, to the disadvantage of the show, I think, is that it doesn't give us the opportunity to grow with the kids, such like Game of Thrones did. I mean, we went through several seasons starting out with those actors being very young and retaining the same actors and, you know, like walking in their shoes, experiencing what they experienced, feeling the slights that they felt, feeling the joy that they felt, and the sorrow that they felt. And we don't have that so much here. I think that this is the last time jump that they're going to be doing for a while. So maybe that'll give us the opportunity to sit with these kids and get more rooting interest. But so far, it just really seems like Jacaerys seems like a really kind kid who already has the weight of the world on his shoulders and just very much wants to live up to expectations. Luke seems like a little bit of a hothead, right? Like he's the one, you know, who ultimately slashed out the eye, even though he's the youngest one involved in all this. Mm-hmm. And he's the one in this episode who, while Jace is like giving a toast and trying to smooth things over, Luke is having none of it and is completely ready to fight.
He's giggling a little bit in the background.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Especially when they bring the pig in. He can't help it.
Yeah, have you heard this debate? Taryn thinks it was an intentional pig. But there was debate over who brought the pig. And I would love GNLT to hear. Ooh. So there was some thought that, does Luke order the pig and has it set down in front of Aemon? And then there was some thought, does Aemon order the pig? Because Aemon is saying, yeah, you might have given me a pig before, but now I like got it roasted and it's here and I'm going to eat it. And then there's like the perfectly like, nobody ordered pig. That was just what was on for dinner. And right. It just happened to be placed down in front of Aemon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the third one is the most likely agree. Because it seems like it's just a member of the house staff, unless it's Talia, who seems to have her mitts and everything.
Yes.
And is more than happy to start some drama. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting to know this set of kids a lot better. I really, even though, you know, it's probably going to be like a love to hate kind of thing, love the character of Aemon. Like I really do think, you know, especially getting to see him spar this episode, how great he's gotten at fighting against Kristen Cole, the worst.
A good episode without saying Kristen Cole, the worst.
The worst.
Yeah.
And also, you know, how he is so perceptive. Like he's fully in the middle of this bout and he only has one eye and it doesn't seem like it's affected him in any way. And before he even turns that eye over to them, he's like, nephews, care to spar, essentially. He just seems like a lot of fun. And the fact that at the dinner, the person that he sizes up against is Daemon, right? Like, and that actor, the younger actor who plays Aemon, almost looks a little bit like Matt Smith too.
They do look very Mitchell. Alike. Yeah, you and Mitchell. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I can see there being some intense scenes happening between those two in the future.
They're both second sons. I think that they have a lot in common that I think they're almost like too alike for them to ever be able to get along. You know, you have those people in your life who you're like, you're a control freak. I'm also a control freak. I don't think we're going to be friends. You know, I don't think so, buddy. Yeah, I think interesting, like you talk about that we haven't got to know these kids. I think that's right. I think so much of so much of this episode of Game of Thrones, the pointy end, is really about the kids coming into their own once their father is in the dungeon and deemed a traitor. You have Jon at the Wall. You have Rob, getting the Bannermen, going to war, leaving Bran behind to be the Lord of Winterfell. Sansa trying to figure out her place at King's Landing and what, you know, the politics there. Arya running away and sort of fighting and fending for her life, not willing to sort of do what Sansa does. And so it's so much about them. Whereas with House of the Dragon, it's been so much about, I think, Alicent and Rhaenyra, and obviously and Viserys as well. And now, and the interesting thing is, like, at this point in the show, right? Like, this is, you know, between the episodes where we're gonna lose Robert and we're gonna lose Ned, the two characters on a normal show who we would follow for four seasons. Like, it's like you sign those guys up to be the leads of your show. And that's, like, not what that should. The show actually, I think Game of Thrones actually be, you know, I think there's the issue with, like, hiring kids who are as young as they ended up having them be, because you get in the issue where, like, with these shows, between, like, 2 years of, like, being able to film, they get old and they, you know, it's kind of an issue. But I think it's kind of interesting that the show has decided, Gia, to take sort of, you have your two leads in Rhaenyra and Alicent, I think, moving forward. And then now you have this, like, also have this crew and Daemon as well. And then you have this crew of kids now who are, like, not as young as the Game of Thrones kids were.
Yeah, honestly, it does. I like what LaTanya said earlier too about how I don't feel as connected to these kids right now. Like, I know they're integral to the plot of House of the Dragon, but they feel like recurring characters at this point because they're so new in their current time skip version, and they don't have a lot of, they have relevance, but it's not the same level of relevance as we have with the adult characters right now. And honestly, it's just like a lot of family squabbling and, you know, boys trying to one up one another, and the girls just kind of there at this point. And at this moment, I can't really stand any of the kids. Like, let's be the House of the Dragon.
Even the Strongs.
I mean, like, they're fine. They're fine, but they're, you know, like, they seem very nice, but I would just like to, I know those are the kids,
you know?
Yeah. I feel like I know these are the kids that we're supposed to root for, you know, like, I know we're supposed to like the Strongs and like that. Totally get it. Makes sense. But, like, let's give them a little bit more of a personality other than, well, they're not the other, they're not the other variation. So we have to like them.
Yep.
So I just really, I felt this way with Jon Snow a couple times as well, especially as we get towards the end where it's like, I like Jon Snow, but, like, let's give him a little more of a personality other than, like, we like him because we're supposed to like him and because, like, they just need to have us to have someone to consistently root for. So it's just not, like, my brand of, like, hero. That I'm much more of a anti-hero, complex characters type person, and those are the type of characters that I enjoy rooting for. And I'm sure we'll see some growth for them. It's probably not fair of me to judge them in their current state and so early in the series, but, like, that's where I'm at with those kids. And I already feel, like, much more connected to the Game of Thrones kids, probably because they had a lot bigger roles and we see a lot more of their personalities. And like I said, like, I loved Sansa in Game of Thrones and was not a huge fan of her, obviously, as, like, when she was very young and very, you know, naive to how the world around her was working. But it was seeing her personality flaws and how she was able to grow from them, not necessarily away from them, but how she was able to become the Queen of the North that we know her in the series finale, and, like, all of her flaws and everything. That's why I loved Sansa so much. So I just want to see a little more depth and complexities with the characters that I know I'm supposed to root for.
I think that's totally fair. I think the one thing, I know some people have said that this can be an annoying critique. This is the first, I believe, that all of the kids became, like, main cast members of this episode.
Yeah.
So as you said, LaTanya, that we're not doing any more time jumps. I do expect that the time jumps will be mostly a season one convention, and that moving forward, they will not be utilized as often. And so I do agree with you. I think that they're, other than Aemond, I don't know, and Aegon a little bit, and actually, I guess all the, like, Viserys' kids, like Aegon, Eamon and Helena are all pretty like fleshed out, at least more than I could say about either Jace or Luke, especially Joffrey. This is also exciting news this week. There was confirmation. A lot of us who are bookers were talking about there's another Targaryen child, a brother of Aemon called Daeron Targaryen, who has not been on the show. And people are like, did they write him out? No, he has been in Old Town. So he will apparently be in future seasons. So there's another child coming at some point. But
another weird ass Allison kid.
Yeah.
On the way.
Yeah.
Down the Old Town Road.
Yeah, he said Old Town. Yeah. Yeah.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time. Apes hunt humans. That is wrong. Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I want to talk a little bit. We haven't really touched so much on Rhaenyra, actually, who I think actually, like, besides Viserys, I'm like, not to spoil my MVP picks, but I feel like I think this is a great Rhaenyra episode. She has a couple really, really strong scenes. So she has the scene with Rhaenys where she offers the betrothal, and I love Rhaenys is awesome too, being like, you know, are you desperate or what? And she's like, it doesn't matter. I'm desperate. And convinces Rhaenys to make the betrothal. She has the chilling scenes with her father, being like the burden was too much. And she has the great speech, I think, at the end, where it seems like she might have won Alicent over if not for the classic misunderstanding. So, Elsie, what did you think of Rhaenyra this episode?
Love Rhaenyra. Love how she's just kind of turned into Earth Mama at this point, too. You know, she is... she's already got Jace and Luke and Joffrey, but now she's also got another Aegon, yet another one, and Viserys, and she's pregnant with another child, which I won't spoil, but I do know a little bit about that, what happens with that kid from the books. So it's just interesting to see like how she's like a happy pregnant person just kind of walking along and trying to teach her kid High Valyrian. But yeah,
she's with the love of her life, her uncle.
Yeah, totally acceptable incest between the Targaryens.
Yeah.
They've been doing it for generations.
Also, I think underrated sort of like sick burn to name your kid Aegon.
Exactly. Yeah. When there's very clearly there's in that generation another Aegon.
Like, well, but not really. Aegon. Aegon's uncle is named Aegon. So technically Aegon got named after his uncle, right?
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. That'll be what they say.
Sick burn. It's so good. It's just hilarious. The name of Aegon. Yeah, it's great.
But yeah, just the scenes between Rhaenyra and Viserys. Especially at the beginning when she just, this is another thing that I have a little bit of difficulty buying. And this comes along again with the time jumps. You haven't seen your very, very ailing, sick father in 6 years?
It's a different time. This is a different time.
Okay.
You know? Yeah.
It's not a time before they had dragons, was it?
No,
very easily just get back and forth. But yeah,
they didn't have like Facebook. You couldn't see like Viserys weird Facebook updates. Like, I don't think father's well.
Cryptic updates. But yeah, the scenes between her and Viserys are so sweet. when she introduces him to his newest grandkids. And she's just trying to ascertain like whether we should bring one of our maesters here. I'm not sure if he's being looked after properly, to calling the entire, you know, reason for everyone being in King's Landing a farce, standing up for mm-hmm. herself in the way that she does, trying to be strategic with Rhaenys and betrothing Baela and Rhaena to her sons, and just generally wanting there to be peace, you know? Like, she really does have some great and genuine moments in later in the episode with Alicent that you hope against hope that is going to mend their, or start to mend their relationship. But it's just not meant to be. And now her father is gone. And so we'll get to see how she handles that. But yeah, Emma D'Arcy is doing amazing, yeah. sweetie. Yeah. They are fantastic in this role. And just such a commanding presence, but also can be very gentle. An amazing voice too. Mm-hmm. Just really, really, really love Rhaenyra as a character. Rooting for her. Rooting for Rhaenyra.
What about you, Gia? You rooting for Rhaenyra? You don't like her kids.
Her kids are annoying, but I suppose yeah. like they are the better option here. No, I am rooting for Rhaenyra. I do really like her. She is definitely, you know, again, she is the character that we're supposed to root for, but I feel like enough time has passed where we get to see all of like who she is as a character. We get to see like her pros and her cons. Also, in the same vein as Marjorie Tyrell, an ally of the LGBTQ plus community. Mm-hmm. So we stan. And yeah, so I enjoyed her so far. I have to compliment the casting choices for the time jump, because mm-hmm. truly impeccable for transitioning from Millie Alcock to Emma D'Arcy. It yes. was, oh my God, just like perfect casting decisions all around. It was very good. And
except for Aegon, new Aegon yeah. doesn't look like yeah. David Tennant's
very
son.
That's fair. A lot shorter yeah. It seems, because yeah. David Tennant's son Ty, very lanky kid, yeah. this kid's a little more boxy yeah. in nature.
Yeah,
so yeah. yeah, I'm not so sure about the Aegon casting. I completely agree with that, Grace,
but everything else is great.
Yeah.
But she, I do really enjoy her, and I am rooting for her success. I am invested in seeing where things go for her. I hope that she is a character that we get to follow for many seasons, and that she does not get the Ned Stark treatment. That is my hope yeah. for, yes, that is like, I have a feeling that is not where we're going with this, but I, you know, Game of Thrones has fooled me once. I will not let it happen again.
Yeah.
It'll fool you yeah. again.
It will. I know.
Fool all of us again, and we're going to be mm-hmm. crying in front of our screens.
Even the book readers were like, "Aha, we know Laenor's going to die." It's like, "Nope." And you're like, oh, "Cool, no. yeah, great." Yeah. The one book change that book readers were like, "Oh, neat," being up in arms about. Mm-hmm. Danny doesn't. Danny doesn't get a ton. This is the like, you know, the watching the heinousness, which is Khal Drogo sack a city for ships and being like, I don't know if I like this. I don't. yeah. I don't know. This is what I signed up for.
yeah. yeah. It's not great. All of the things that, at least in practice later, that Danny, or you know, in theory somewhat, that Danny is against, taking slaves, rape, you know, murdering people for no good reason, is happening right in front of her, and she takes her time stopping it, you know. It has to get to a point where she's just like, no, okay, like not having this anymore. And then what a dummy is Khal Drogo. Like, why mm-hmm. did you feel the need to prove how strong you were by pressing yourself against that blade?
Don't say strong. He's going to think that he, his father is Harwin Strong. He's
gonna think, such a strong boy.
How dare you? Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. He'll take umbrage with that. But yeah, Khal Drogo, completely willing to change how the Dothraki operate for Daenerys, you know, it's a vibe.
It is a vibe, yeah. Unfortunately, it's gonna literally cause him his life. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah.
He causes his own life to, that's you true. Know, like, yeah. If he didn't have to walk into that blade, he just wanted to show how strong he was. Who knows when the last time that thing was cleaned?
Yeah.
They were probably just murdering never. With it. Yeah, they were just murdering with it. What are you doing?
Yeah. We get to Miri Mazdur in this episode, who becomes a little bit of an important part towards the end of the season.
You love Miri Mazdur, Gia?
Yeah.
I love a troublemaker. What can I say?
Yeah. It's called a witch. How can you not love her? Yeah. Yeah. The guy's like, witch.
We are in spooky season. This was that's the perfect right. time good for point. This episode. Yes.
Good point.
This yeah, is I can her month.
It was pretty cool when Miri Mazdur like showed up in Hocus Pocus 2. I was like, whoa, that's cool. I was not expecting that. But I feel like there's also this random scene. It's like the second last scene of this the House of the Dragon episode is Masira is Daemon's previous mistress and the serving girl is that's Talia, right?
LT yeah, it's Talia.
Like, yeah, what an eventful night at the castle. What does this mean? I haven't even the other part. I don't think I've heard anybody else being like, "What's happening?" This is just because there was a lot of rumors about. The book readers knew Viserys was going to die. I kind of wish that the showrunners were like, if everyone was like, Viserys is dead, right? After like he breathes, he's like, my love, and he's dead. And there's like, you never know. Like, I kind of hope they were just like letting people linger in it for a full week, right. Instead of just like immediately the preview being like, the king is dead. But whatever. But what do we make of this? Like, it was Daemon's like hood. That's his style. That's his look. Lurking in the middle of the night. Do you have any predictions about what this is for? Because I can't figure it out.
So the implication is that she's feeding her information, right? Like right. the yes. yeah. But like, so I am also confused as like, what does she do with this information? Like, what is the importance of all of this in the long run? Like, what power does she have to change anything about any of their situations by the information that we're hearing? So I am not sure.
Yeah, because nobody since Daemon left and he lives in Dragonstone, doesn't seem like anybody in particular hangs out in Fleabottom per se. I guess Aegon is the only person who's kind of like up to no good. That's it. Wow, I regret saying up to no good when he literally raped a woman this episode. So I will just say he is a bad person, and
he is a bad person.
I'll take back up to no good. That's right. Too nice for Aegon. But he's the only person who I feel like could be involved in something that would be like blackmail, like involved in with that stuff. Laris doesn't make an episode appearance in this episode. He's somebody who I could see being like involved in the trading of information as well.
It kind of putting Masseria into the role of being the master of whispers.
Varys has the scene with Ned where he's just like, I do it for the realm, like somebody has to be like looking right after people.
But it will be interesting to learn essentially who Masseria is whispering to, because we kind of get the idea earlier in the season when Daemon and Rhaenyra go to the brothel, right, that it's Masseria who gives that information to Otto Hightower.
Isn't it a little boy? It's a little boy who leaves and go gives the information, right?
Yeah, but I think that's correct, but I also think that it's like Masseria has the spy operation
right.
going.
Okay, all right. Okay.
And is like the spy master, like the master of whispers.
Right.
I just don't understand who that information is getting back to. Is it Otto Hightower?
I guess maybe, yeah, Otto's in on it. I will just huge shout out to Otto Hightower for doing the silliest little golf clap I've ever seen during the dance. It was delightful. And I want a gif of it immediately.
Please. So funny that it made Olivia Cook break character and just start giggling. And another really weird beat that Otto Hightower had at that dinner scene was when Helena stands up to give a toast to Bela and Rhaena, and it's just like, you know, being married isn't that bad. He mostly ignores you unless he's drunk. And then Otto Hightower goes, good. What?
Justice for Helena, please give her something else to do besides be miserable with this horrible human.
What do we think her words were mean this week. She said, beware the
beast be below the boards, boards, right? Yeah.
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 I still think that they should have someone walking around behind her at all times, just writing down everything she mutters, because it all ends up coming true in some way, shape, or form.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, all of her theories have come true thus far. So,
but what are the beasts below the boards? Like, what could that mean?
Is it green fire? Is that what that thing is? That
the explosion, like
wildfire?
The stuff,
yeah.
Wildfire,
that one. Yeah. Is that, could it be that? I don't know. I can't think of what
was stored by the Mad King.
Yeah, was stored by the Mad King. Yeah.
So that's like years later.
Listen, but pretty tough to make predictions when you're a book reader. It's pretty tough to sit here and be like, I don't know. I wonder.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. I don't mean to stifle the conversation. Continue theorizing. I just don't. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess.
And mute myself. Yeah.
Or like if there's someone that they're going to in prison or something. I don't know. Oh. Well, like they resurrect people. Stop. Grace just is listening to me make an ass of myself unprovoked. Just the message boards will all just be like, oh, Gia's not
a book seriously.
Reader.
Grace, listen, to quote the great Tom Cruise, you're glib, Grace. You're glib.
Interesting theories.
Tom Cruise and Alicent Hightower would be friends.
Exactly. That's true.
Yes. They would be like besties. They would be besties. They would be wearing all kinds of gaudy jewelry and trying to get as many people as possible to convert to the faith of the seven.
Lots of stars everywhere. I can picture it.
Very rich people converting to the faith of the seven.
What We Do in the Shadows this season did a whole episode where they just pretended that it was a TV, like a makeover show, like an HGTV show. And I think that I really would like to see the House of the Dragon episode where Alicent redoes the Red Keep in religious garb.
Special episode to
I
would watch that.
Where they bring like in the Property Brothers. Yeah, that would be great. All right, should we start comparing, rank, you know, officially playing the game, the versus game here. I think your first category, this is pretty cut and dry here because we have the Kingsguard. And this episode, Bersin Semley gets
Selmy gets
totally
did it right.
He's retired. he's put into forced retirement. Joffrey says you're too old. And so he's first relieved. Kristen Cole doesn't really do anything this episode. He spars with Damon. Sorry. Jaime Lannister does get made commander of the Kingsguard. So you know, there's that. But yeah, what do we think?
I think it was cool how Barristan Selmy went out, you know?
He's pretty bad.
Yes.
Yeah. He was just like, I've been doing this since before all of you were born. What are you talking about?
He says he would slay all five of them.
Yes.
It's super badass. Yeah.
He was, so I've been watching Dairy Girls at the same time that I watched.
Yes.
I watched the season one, episode 8 of Game of Thrones. And so seeing, Sir Barristan.
Is that the dad?
He's the granddad.
Granddad
Joe, is, hot take, the best character on the show. His one role is to hate on Jerry. And you know what? He does it flawlessly.
Wow.
And
he's if we're
being honest, the best character on Dairy Girls is clearly Seamus.
Yeah. Well, should we give Barristan Selmy the award just because for his performance as Grandpa Joe in
I think in Dairy Girl? He transcends decades, or I guess centuries. Like this is like millennia and
multiverse, whole universes. I think,
The Sir Barristan Selmy multiverse is, you know, quite an expansive universe out there. And honestly, and Sir Barristan Selmy is one of my favorite of the like underrated secondary characters.
Agreed.
And just has a really fun ride. And he does not die here, where unfortunately a lot of people do die from sword fighting in the pointy end. But, you know, It's a shocker with that title, but he does not die, and he actually goes on to live for several more seasons, and I am just a big fan of him. I enjoyed his character a lot, and I will always give Grandad Joe an award.
Agreed. LT, you concur?
Yeah, I think Ser Barristan is very much like, I have served this realm and all these kings with honor. You people are not honorable. You're not going to retire me and buy me off. I would rather just go off and do anything else than have to be in your debt. So peace, bitches.
Honestly, leaving the set or like leaving that area is probably the smartest thing. Leaving King's Landing is the smartest thing anyone could have done in that moment. And only Ser Barristan Selmy had the gumption to do so. So
exactly.
Agreed.
I am in awe. I'm in awe of such a man.
I agree. Josh also, yes.
When I say not all men, I'm specifically referring to Ser Barristan Selmy.
Wow.
And Grandad Joe.
And Grandad Joe, well, Josh also agreed. Josh, specifically in his note, this is weird. He said, when I say not all men, I specifically mean Barristan Selmy Grandad Joe. So he also voted that way. So I think we're a clean sweep. That ties it up for the Game of Thrones Kingguard. I think it's impressive. Yeah, 2-2. All right, let's talk about our queens on the board. Queen Alicent and Queen Cersei. Lechana, let's start with you. Who do you think had the better week?
Well, Cersei is essentially in power. She may as well be queen, you know, just like the queen, not just queen regent. Whereas Alicent saw her gaudy symbolism made fun of in her own home, was reminded by her very near-death husband that, you know, the proceedings that she was happy to preside over shouldn't even have been happening in the first place. And then she completely did a U-turn in terms of her allegiance to Rhaenyra. You know, Rhaenyra's coming back on Dragonback because she wants to bond with you. And all you can do is think of yourself and misconstrue the words from the lips of a dying man. No. I'm going with Cersei on this one. And I honestly don't think I'm alone, frankly. I think Cersei has had a pretty great week, and she is the queen.
She is the queen. This is tough because I think Alicent, like, if we don't have the last scene, I think I'm like, yeah, okay, maybe Alicent actually wins the week, like,
right,
actually posting Rhaenyra, like, that's good. And then she just, like, mishears the prophecy, and I'm like, nah, you're gonna be bad, you're bad, you're worse. Cersei has a bad, like, you know, is bad, but I think from, like, a, because, like, I almost think that, as I said before, that Cersei is a, Alicent is a not fully fleshed out Cersei at this point, even though, interestingly, like, we have so much more backstory to, like, sympathize with Alicent. She's, like, kind of not really, like, in the villain mode yet, and she's not really a hero, so it's like, yeah, I don't know if you're, like, at least Cersei's, like, fully just bad and evil, you know? Gia, what do you think?
She owns it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is it, Cersei, and it, for me, it's not even close. Like, season one Cersei is Cersei in her best form. She's got her man. She's got her weird kids. Everything's together. She's in power now. Her husband that she doesn't like and also didn't like her is dead now. Her son's in power. Anyone that is questioning her is, you know, not going to have a very nice ending in one more episode. And, you know, everything is going well for Cersei. And she knows that now that she has power, she is holding on to it with an iron fist on the Iron Throne. And even though Joffrey is the one sitting in the Iron Throne, they know, everyone knows that Cersei is the one in power, and the King of the Hand is now her dad. So this is about as much power as the Lannisters are ever going to have in this capacity. So this is like the best we are getting of Cersei in her most evil form right now. Like, she is there, she is at the top. And Alicent is still struggling to maintain the power that she does have. She can't, you know, she clearly does not like Aegon, her son, but she wants to keep him in power. She really doesn't do anything to hold him accountable for the atrocities that he commits. Sounds like this is something that's been going on for a while. And, you know, she's kind of struggling to just keep things together with what she already has. And I don't know what she would do in a Cersei position. She certainly, at this current state, is not as confident in herself as Cersei is. And I think season one Cersei is this magnificent evil force all of its own. So just I love this version of Cersei for what it is. In terms of like female villains, she is top form here.
It's very interesting. I know that people, we talked about the thing about how people are like, yeah, Viserys is a bad king because he leaves his like realm in ruin. Just like Robert does that, and then Cersei comes in and is just like, yeah, we're gonna clean this whole thing up. We just go kill all the Stark kids, and we'll get Ned. Don't worry, we'll put him in a cell. Like Cersei, like knows exactly. She has like a very tidy to do list. Break the betrothal.
Her home and garden channel episode would be very efficient. None of these extra breaks or anything like that. She knows what she wants. She's been planning things in her head of how she is going to remodel for a long time. They wasted no second since Robert breathed his last breath. And it's very impressive the level of efficiency we are seeing here from the Lannisters as a whole.
Yeah. Well, that also ties up the Queen battle through 8 episodes. Very interesting. Okay, let's compare princes. This is interesting because one of our princes got promoted. He is now king. Technically, I guess, so our prince, I guess, on Game of Thrones, you could say Tommen probably is the prince of the movie. He's not really in the episode.
We don't see him.
There's like, but Rob is it? Rob's going to become the Lord. Like, technically, he's like the Lord of Winterfell, right? Yeah. He's going to be the Lord. So I don't know if there really is a Game of Thrones. I feel like by default we might have to give it. But who? And then who's our House of the Dragon?
Aegon.
Aegon. There's also I guess there's Jace too, but we could say
Aegon. there's Jace.
If we were comparing Aegon to Joffrey before,
I will say Jace hit someone, so he gets my vote.
Aegon raped a woman this episode, so
that's true. That's very true. Let's say Jace. And Jace is learning Valyrian. He is technically like Rhaenyra is the princess, but then she's gonna, you know, and then there's Jace. Yeah.
I will also add though that this is Rickon's shining moment in Game of
Thrones.
That's true. Bronn says that, you know, oh, they're gonna all be reunited and everything's gonna be good, and Rickon's like, no, we won't, and then done. And then you know that he's correct. No one has ever been more correct in Game of Thrones than Rickon in this very moment.
I have texted Josh Wigger because Josh Wigger did put a vote down. He voted for House of the Dragon Prince, but I'm not sure who he's referring to.
Who'd you vote for, Josh?
So that's a very good argument, though, that Rickon is like, no, we're not going to be together ever again.
You're just a liar.
He said what we were all thinking, which is essentially, shut up, Bran.
Get back on that tree, Branch.
Yeah, but Jace is so cute. Yeah, he's learning High Valyrian. He's like if you put Luke in, Jace is the one who like dances with Lana. Right? This is so cute.
It's
would give the
vote. Jace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll give it to House of the Dragon for princes. The Hand of the King. So Ned Stark's not really, so Tywin, he officially gets put in that position this episode. And then we have Otto, who I feel like not a great week for any hand. I guess Tywin does get like put into the position and that's going well. Meanwhile, Otto gets totally like interrupted. He's like trying to like rule from the Iron Throne and then Viserys is like, I don't know if either of them, I kind of think actually like Tywin kind of has the better week.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't do much, but nothing's really going wrong for him.
Right.
Unless, depending on how you feel about Tyrion coming back.
But he did get to add to his forces the Hill tribe.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah, so... I think it's Tywin is the better.
Yeah.
It's gotta be.
Yeah, it's gotta be Tywin.
Otto Josh... Hightower just golf clap clapping away.
Gosh, I did forget about the golf clap. And Josh did vote for Otto, perhaps really? On the strength of a single golf clap. So I don't know.
Good.
I'll vote for Tywin. I think he has the better episode over Otto. Otto's really, really in the background since his return. His second stint he's much quieter.
He's wielding a lot of power though while remaining quiet. And you've got to beware the quiet ones. But I'd say for this episode, I'd give it to Tywin.
Okay, that's 5-3 for Game of Thrones. Let's talk about the heirs, which would be Dany and Rhaenyra. I think Rhaenyra has a much better episode. I think she really proves. I think there was this moment coming out of kind of the first two episodes where people, I think one of the things that people really liked about Rhaenyra is that she seemed to be sort of good at being queen, that she would eventually be a really great queen, even if she didn't necessarily want to be queen. And I think this episode shows that same thing, that she's like, the burden is very heavy. This is hard. This is bad. But she's good at it. You know, the fact that she is pretty much able to like win Allison back over to her side, I think it's like quite telling. I think, you know, during this, she's like also like when she's like, I'm taking my kids home. Like, you guys are all grounded. I think she's also a great mother. So I think, you know, you could give the vote to Dany here. As you were saying, she like fundamentally changes Count Drogo's like belief system and this the way that their society works. That's pretty impressive. But I think I would vote for Rhaenyra here, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Rhaenyra was able to motivate her father, the king, who is literally wasting away and in so much pain due to terminal illness, by sheer force of, Father, please help me. She's able to will the king to get on the Iron Throne for the last time. And
she brokers a deal with Rhaenys.
She brokers a deal with Rhaenys. She's got her family kind of squared away. Her heirs are going to get what they deserve. Hopefully, probably not. But for right now, I think that Rhaenyra is in a much better position than Dany.
What do you think, Gia?
I'm going to be real honest, guys. Like, I've been waiting to say this for a very long time, but Dany is so annoying this episode. I can't with her. So, like, the thing, I understand Dany's purpose in this. Obviously, she is one of the main characters of the entire series, but, like, I cannot get over the white saber complex. That is the overarching idea of her character arc in the Game of Thrones series, and this is the epitome of it, where she inserts her ideas in terms of like, oh, instead of us pillaging, you guys need to marry the women that you were going to take advantage of, which does not
I guess when you put it that way, like, she fixed the system. It's like, you have to marry these men.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
You have to marry the men that were going to take advantage of you.
And they definitely won't take advantage of you once they're married.
Exactly.
They definitely
won't. If you want to take advantage of them, put a ring on it, is basically what Dany decided.
Oh, yeah. I solved the gender wars, everybody. I, Daenerys Targaryen, did that.
Yeah, very quickly to just be like, well, just be married then, you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Fixed it, you guys. Don't worry. So she basically is just indoctrinating more women into the life that she was forced into.
Exactly. And then very Rishi Aprile of her too. Wow.
Yeah. And then also, like, this is something that happens regularly with Daenerys's character, and it's usually brown people of color that she is instilling her ideas, what we are supposed to believe are the better ideas. And it starts with how she instills her beliefs, or what she believes is the best approach to a system like this, on Khal Drogo. And for some reason, like, that she, as the white savior, is enough to change his way of thinking, his way of life. And things do get more complicated for her throughout the series, but this is just like the recurring thing we get from Daenerys. And this is really where it starts for me. I can't with Dany. I'm like, it was not it for me. She was not giving what people want her to give here.
That's great.
I love it.
I love this. Rhaenyra minded her business. You know, she had her goal. She did what she had to do. Do I agree with everything that she was saying? Not always, but you know what? Just like, she is the best option. Who are we kidding to say otherwise?
I love that the show is so funny. I say this a lot about board games, where you're playing board games and it's just like, I'll trade you 4 sheep for 2 wood, or, you know, like sentences you would never say anywhere else in your life, unless you're a sheep and wood farmer. And in this one, I was like, on my list of things that she did well, she's like, oh, she made a great deal with Rhaenys, which is like, she married her children to her children's cousins. Yeah, check that. Oh, success.
Diplomacy, and people. That's
right. And that may be one of the healthiest relationships we are going to get from the children, at least.
She's in such a happy relationship with her uncle.
Oh, she really is in a happy relationship with her uncle.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, kings. This is fun because LT, the first time we have Joffrey, a new king. Mm. King Joffrey Baratheon up against King Viserys for the last time. Viserys. I think this is like, you know, we're talking all week. Paddy Considine just killing it, literally. Yeah. I guess not literally, because Paddy Considine didn't die. And also, I did forget, I made that joke about the RuPaul's Drag Race. He come off the thing, and there's like a scene of him dancing, and he's saying, giving Targaryen realness, because he's a RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's true. I saw that.
But this is like, by far and away, this has to be wins this thing hands down for me. It's just like such a powerful episode. It's tragic because his last moment, he's seeing his love. He thinks he's like united everyone together, and it has not happened. So this is such a good performance by Viserys.
So are we rating it on the performance or effectiveness of their goals?
I think you can choose who has the better episode, rubric. Right?
Basically
comes down to who has the better episode, and you choose.
Because I could see an argument that Joffrey is more successful in his endeavors this episode than King Viserys is. Yes,
it's like, because Viserys is such a great performance, and just overall is just such a more compelling character than what Joffrey is supposed to be to us, which is just this evil demon child.
Even in this episode, he's not really demon child, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, kind of like, he winks a little bit. He barely says anything this episode.
It's really he's in power. We are supposed to believe that he is considering giving mercy to Ned Stark. What are you saying? If you don't accept me as a king, then you're going to die. Which, like, how many times do... That's not the craziest thing we hear in Games of Thrones, because everyone says that. So I was like, I really liked Viserys as a character and the journey that we see with him. But then also it's like, but he didn't accomplish the one goal he really wanted to in keeping his family united together.
He said this episode, he said, I want to have family dinner. Motto. And he did
have family
and
dinner.
And he wanted to stamp him on the throne. And he almost did it all by himself.
Yeah,
it was, and it's just so sad to see him in the current state that he was in. Just like, he looked like the old little shriveled up character in SpongeBob in the chocolate episode. Oh.
Another thing he did by himself. He at the end he says no more, and he dies all on his own.
He does. He wills his own death.
He accomplishes so many things this episode.
He really prophesies
his own death 2 seconds later.
Yes.
No more.
I love. That was a perfect impersonation.
I suggested to Josh Wigler recently that we should be doing a House of the Dragon table read after the episode. And this one, I think, is fun. God. I'm just auditioning for Viserys.
I
would love for you to do that.
I volunteer to be Helena.
Okay.
I will just give everyone what they want, and I'll be Allison.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Great.
All right, I will.
Are you casting the Soul Joffrey vote?
I don't know. Yeah. Like, the pettiness in me doesn't want to give Joffrey anything. But
here's the thing. LT, can I ask your vote for? I'm voting for Viserys. Who are you voting for, LT?
I'm voting for Viserys.
Yeah. So now you can cast the Joffrey vote.
I really should
have won, but they didn't vote with me, but I cast the vote, you know.
All right. I'll do the Joffrey
vote for.
Josh also voted for Viserys. So.
Okay.
I'll vote for Joffrey here.
No tiebreaker needed.
Which, once again, ties up the board. We're heading into a category that is a pretty much a full sweep here for Game of Thrones, which is the ending of the episode. 6-1 currently. I think the ending to one of these episodes is much better than the other. I feel like this is probably the weakest Game of Thrones ending in season 1, which is, it's almost the same scene that we've seen earlier, but with like a weird like plea from Sansa that her father is like, she'll do whatever they want essentially. And I'm like, we already saw this scene. And this is the note we're ending on. I don't know what else you end on this episode, but this one is not it.
It ends abruptly too.
It does. It's like a fade.
Yes, to the point where it seems like there was maybe more, and they just cut it out. It's weird. I definitely would give it to House of the Dragon because, you know, it's the end of an era, right? It's Viserys's death, and all you see on the black screen is the subtitles. Breathing stops.
Yeah. Do you agree, Gia?
I honestly
death hilarious.
Just the subtitles, breathing stops. Just I don't know. I guess that's important, but also I feel like it was implied. But I don't know.
I know. I wanted them to just like leave it so loosey whether he actually died for another week.
No,
I
think that's why like they have the subtitle there so that it's specifically like people can't say wait, but you know.
LT, I don't know if you know that some people don't watch the subtitles, which is wild.
Who are
me,
those people?
I know.
Sociopath. That's who. But also, I just don't. And like it was the equivalent, the subtitles at least, the equivalent of like when like Netflix does subtitles really poorly for foreign language show or non-English speaking shows. And it's like, oh, speaks in foreign language as the subtitle when they're breaking away from English. And I'm just like,
I have a joke that's only for people who watch with subtitles. Would you like?
Okay. Yes, please.
It's not really a joke. I'm just going to say a thing and we'll all be like, oh, I know what you mean, which is indistinct chatter is my favorite. Yeah, see? It's not even a joke. There's no punchline. I just say the word, but subtitle people, you get it.
I'm going to find a way to put that in my Twitter bio somewhere. Just, I got this. Okay.
No, just post I'll find it. Just have that be a post. Like,
I'm tweeting it right now.
Parentheses or something.
Yeah, put it in the block.
In block quotes. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right. We should all tweet that.
That's a good idea. Let's all right
let's
now.
Let's all tweet it right
indistinct.
Now.
Yes. I'm tweeting it as we speak. Okay.
This is great podcasting.
This is amazing detective work.
All right, just gonna tweet that out. All right, so I think we're all in agreement. Oh, yeah. Do we all vote for the House of the Dragon ending?
Yeah, my point that I was gonna make is that I forgot how the Game of Thrones episode ended, which is like this is honestly one of my favorite episodes overall because it's just got a lot of really strong moments in Game of Thrones, but the ending is just so much a non-factor to me. I really did not remember it until you brought it up. And yeah, like what you said with House of the Dragon, this really is the end of the era. This is the ending that people have been waiting for. And it was just such a strong ending here.
Mm. It's interesting that you said this is one of your favorite episodes. I think that this one kind of gets, so if we're going to do the full episode, this one kind of gets, I think the pointy end gets a little bit lost because next episode is so big. And it's really the moment that if you were watching through season 1 or when you started and you were going through it and you heard the hype about it and somehow managed to be unspoiled, the next episode is the first really big wow moment. I think this is the fun episode in terms of this is really the Stark show in this episode and them, you know, sort of fleeing from the wreckage. Whereas I think that this House of the Dragon episode is going to be really, I think it's a more memorable, like, what seemingly I would say is the calm before the storm to a degree, because you can just feel so much is bubbling. There's so much tension. And so I kind of think like when I went back to watch episode, the fun thing about going back to watch Game of Thrones is it's been like, wow, Game of Thrones is really good. And even this is an episode, which is like not really one of my favorites, even from season 1, it's still really good. Like there's so, to your point about the characters having so much depth, like, yeah, every time the fact that you could go to 5 different places and every time be like, oh yeah, like this is fun. Like, you know, even at King's, like even Barristan, like getting, you're like, oh yeah, Barristan, yeah. And like, you know, for me, even I'm a little, I really grew to love like Jorah a lot. So like, yeah, it's kind of like fun to bounce around, and there's so much depth. It's like, you know, where literally the other episode is mostly like the last half of the episode is spent in one room together with all of these people who are at each other's throats. And it's much more, I think, tense. So I think I go with House of the Dragon, had the stronger episode, but it's still really good Game of Thrones episode. Yeah. What do you think, LT?
Yeah. So for me, this Game of Thrones episode is a table setter. It's a little bit of a nothing burger of an episode as compared to House of the Dragon, in my humble opinion. You know, we get the idea and the feeling just because of how tense everything is that we are working up to something. And especially if you are watching this for the first time, you're just waiting in anticipation of what's going to happen with Ned and having no idea that what's coming is coming. So, yeah. You know, just because it's sandwiched between such great episodes of Game of Thrones, this one for me is not one of my favorites of the season. So I definitely would give it to House of the Dragon overall over this episode of Game of Thrones, just because with House of the Dragon, it is another table setter of an episode, but we get a gnarly, gnarly death.
We haven't even talked about Baemon at all.
Oh wow. My God.
We don't talk about Baemon. but yeah, like he gets to keep, like the fact that Daemon is just like standing behind him, say it, like everyone else in the audience, is so hilarious. And I totally was not expecting him though to off with his head and say he could keep his tongue. Like,
it's so good. It's a epic line. It's a memorable. That's such an epic line. I think you were like, have you watched the House of the Dragon episode? And I was like, you can keep your tongue. It's so good. It's so cool. Good.
And then Rhaenys is just standing there, like while the Silent Sisters prepare the body, just almost making sure this bastard is gone.
But the line from Rhaenys of like, I don't think the God of Death cares whether I have my eyes open or closed. She's like, oh, it's so good. There's so many. I think that I agree. I think one of the things you folks have said over the course of this pod is that like the Game of Thrones dialogue is so good. And when I was getting ready for like House of the Dragon to come back, I was like looking up just like specific quotes. There's so many good quotes from this show that like almost it feels impossible that they came from Game of Thrones. It's almost like it feels like they were like embedded in culture before Game of Thrones. It's not true at all. Like they come through the show. And I don't think that House of the Dragon has as many, but I do think like every once in a while you're like, that's a good one. And in this episode in particular, those two in particular are just like, those will stick with me for sure.
Yeah. I just really love, and I think it's in part because of what I look for in shows, and I'm a big comedy person. I love seeing characters and moments that aren't necessarily important to the overall plot of the show, but are fun ways to get to know the character specifically. Like I loved everything with Tyrion this episode. Same. I already gave my praise to Sir Barristan Selmy and Grandad Joe, and was also just across series, across franchises, and
across time and space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tyrion and Bronn are always just a really fun duo to have. Seeing the Starks in what little parcels we get of all of them before everything gets even worse than it already has been. Seeing these characters before they're grown, seeing Lannisters in their top villain form. I just really like this episode, and there's just a lot of devastating deaths as well. Maybe not to the same level as like the epic graphic death that we get.
Yeah, the stable Baemon. Boy.
Yeah. The stable boy. R.I.P. Stable boy. Nameless boy.
Yeah.
You will sort of not.
The White Walker who gets lit on fire.
I believe
the guy who attacks fights Khal Drogo is called Mogo. That's a great name.
Oh yeah,
Mogo.
Didn't even talk about the Night's Watch. That was like a whole thing that was still happening. Yeah,
Sam being super smart, being like, they should have been dead for. They should smell.
There's no smell. What's going on?
Night's Watch and Sam Tarly, also like underrated plot devices and underrated King and Samwell Tarly. So, you know, big fans overall. So I just liked all of the little moments that we got in the Game of Thrones episode in the pointy end. I thought it was just like a very fun treat before everything goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To the dark place in the next episode.
Yeah. It's very, even a little scene, Bran and Osha talking on the near the Godwood's tree. And he's like, are there really giants back there? And she's like, they need to be sending all these men north. Like, so much in that episode that doesn't feel like, to the point of like, it does feel a little wheel spinny before the next one, but there's so much.
Mm-hmm. There's so much. Yeah. There's for some reason a fully nude Hodor.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that at all. Yeah,
why? I don't, fully
nude. Yeah.
This show is confounding to me for so many reasons, but all of the nudity and sex position that happens in Game of Thrones is wild.
To be fair,
I don't need a reason. Yeah, it was it just happened. It's like, we don't need a reason for it.
Both D and I immediately come to Naked Hodor's defense.
Like indistinct chatter.
Yeah, I was going to say, my memory of Game of Thrones is like, there's a lot of boobs. And then I was like, oh, Hodor's penis. Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, neat. Okay, cool. He literally for no reason. Literally for
it's none. None. Yeah. Listen, nobody. There's no reason for it, but no, it's no on one. HBO, so we're going to call it the greatest series of all time.
Nobody, no one, not a single person, Hodor's penis.
Yes. should we all tweet that one out?
Actually, okay. Yes.
No, I can't. Okay, that gives House of the Dragon wins a lot this week, still maintains its lead over Game of Thrones, but Game of Thrones makes some traction. Wins in three categories. That's good. Let's talk MVPs, LVPs. I can give you. I would be interested to hear maybe yours first. LT, do you have a House of the Dragon MVP?
Well, this is tough because I want to say Viserys.
Yeah,
just because of overall that performance. And this is his last episode.
Yeah, last time to give him. Well, you know, who knows? But could be his last time to give him.
I think this might be the last time to give him his flowers, and he deserves. You know, like he really is the beating heart until the end of the episode that the family coalesces around, and the fact that his mere absence is going to be wild enough to cause a civil war between his family just really encapsulates how important he is.
So, I also think a very impressive I was like, he has a lot of LVP. Oh no, he does have a lot of LVP.
He does players. Yeah,
he is -4. He's tied with Sir Criston Cole.
I think I'm gonna go with Viserys.
You know what, that is what Josh did as well. I think that's totally fair. I think it's such a phenomenal episode that I think that's entirely fair. Gia, do you have an MVP? MVP?
Yeah, I do. I've been going back and forth with it for a while because I feel like there are so many reasons to say certain people are MVPs or why some of the big candidates shouldn't be MVPs. I'm going to go with Rhaenyra's though, because I think she really had the most wins of the episode in terms of like what she got done. She was still able to maintain her position. She had her daughters or her granddaughter?
Is this Rhaenys, like Rhaenys, like Corlys's wife?
Corlys's wife. Okay,
Her granddaughters.
Her granddaughter. So she's getting what they want in like them still maintaining power. The final decision was up to her. So I feel like she got the most power out of the situation, the most wins. And while obviously, yes, she is still very spiteful, she is making the most of a situation where one of the few low points for Rhaenyra in this episode where she was a little desperate and she called it out on it. And I think she had a lot of epic moments here. So I'm going to give it to her.
Mm. Those are the two people I was thinking about, plus Rhaenyra. I think I will go with Rhaenyra. I think that she, again, this like thing of like pretty much having Alicent, you know, like won over, even if that ultimately will not turn out to be true. I think that, you know, does she come off desperate? Yeah, but she also admits it and is like, it doesn't really matter. Like, this is, you know, I think she's just such a good, she's able to maneuver. She just knows sort of what to do. She's like, I'm, you know, we got to get out of here. I got to take my kids back. There's too much conflict here. I think she just says a really good episode. The other person I guess you could maybe give it to is Daemon for cutting Daemon.
Between the brothers for who I would give my MVP point to for House of the Dragon. And I mean, that was an epic scene, cutting off Daemon's head like that.
All right, let's do House of the Dragon LVPs. Gia, I'm gonna start with you, actually, if that's right.
It's got to be Vaymond. Like, he did not. He died. And also, like, he did not get his way. I am interested to see what is the result of his death. But none of the main characters were really backing him, except potentially for Alicent and
Otto.
And she didn't get the chance to really exercise any type of power that she would have had here. Mm-hmm. And he died. And he died in not a noble way, you know, compared to Viserys and the epic ending that we got from him. So I feel like it has to be him. You know, I don't really know where else I could go with this.
There's one other that I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a few. There's also just people I don't like that I want to give it to them. But
I
think you and I are going to be on the same page.
Yeah.
Aegon.
Aegon the older.
I hate the baby. I hate the baby
so much. That freaking baby.
For being the less relevant to the story, Aegon. Right?
Less relevant, Aegon. I mean, Aegon only has conversations with his mother while under a single sheet, completely naked.
Yep.
That just is true to form. Completely takes advantage of this poor servant girl, Diana, and she's just so shaken up. That actress gives a really, really great performance. I haven't been able to find her name, though. But yeah, the actress who plays Diana gives a really, really great performance. You just really buy how like terrified she is for having gone through the ordeal that she did, but also now having to face the queen. It's just an awful situation to be in. And he just, you know, is needling Jace during the entire dinner, trying to make fun of him, absolutely ignoring his wife, who is also his sister. At least Vaemon gets to go out in an epic fashion, but also after having made his opinions known to everyone at court, you know, like these are clearly not of my blood. These kids are white and they have brown hair. They are not Laenor's kids. And it's about time that everyone acknowledge this openly. And he does that. And, you know, it's not great that he calls Rhaenyra a whore. I could have done without that. But, yeah, Aegon is a rapist. So.
I also gave my point to Aegon. Not the first episode. Actually, Chappelle gave baby Aegon back in episode 3. So Aegon already knew. On the board. Yeah, Chappelle knew. Chappelle. Recently suspended from Twitter, Chappelle, too.
Oh.
What are they trying to say? Spicy. Silence him?
Yeah. I don't Mari know. Mari Kaur, too. Mari coming, as well.
So. Yeah, but she's back.
Free Mari.
Mari's been freed. It's
free
a bad
Mari
episode.
Again.
Yeah, I think, to Vaemon, he gets cut in half. That's fair. That's totally fair. He goes out pretty badly.
I liked Vaemon better than Aegon. Yeah, I'm not saying
think it's totally, it's totally fair. Also, Aegon, there's like, you know, not that there's you need anything else, but he also is the one who, like, is causing stuff at the dinner, like, right, as well, where, like, there's kind of, like, you know, I think that we're too far gone to think that, like, one family dinner means nothing happens after Viserys dies. But Aegon is clearly, like, at least Jace and Luke are, like, being, you know, Luke maybe less so, but Jace is trying to, like, mend fences a bit, and Aegon is just not having it at all, like, taunting his cousins as well. So let's go to Game of Thrones. Let's give out we could give it our LVPs first. I think it's more fun. I'm gonna give my LVP, you know, I hate him, and I think if I was on the spot every week I would give it to this person for the rest of his entire Game of Thrones run. Grandmaster Pycelle. He sucks. He's like, treason is treason. You're like, shut up. Who made you Grandmaster? You suck. I give Grandmaster Pycelle my LVP for Game of Thrones this week. He sucks.
Yeah, he is awful.
Yeah.
Gia, you want to go? Because I'm having a hard time trying to figure out who.
I can tell you who Josh gave.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Can we hear Josh's first?
Yeah. Josh gave it to Lysa Arryn, which I think is a good call as well. Lysa, she, like, refuses her own sister's call to banners. Like, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
Stop breastfeeding that grown ass man.
Actually, she did tell him.
Oh, wait. I do have my LVP.
Yeah.
But you know who got showed up by the woman that is breastfeeding her, like, preteen child? Caitlin. No one's listening to Caitlin, and honestly I still don't like how she was mean to Jon Snow for something that is not even his fault. It's right between her and Ned for me. I need, because Ned also had a very rough week.
Ned just sits in the dungeon now.
Grandmaster Pycelle also sucks. This is
hard.
The big three, the Stark couple.
Whenever we're talking about Game of Thrones, we all always talk about the big three, which is Ned, Catelyn, and Grandmaster Pycelle.
Yes.
They're the most important players on every board all the time.
Constantly in rotation in my mind.
Yeah.
But I think Varys makes some very good points about everything that Ned Stark did leading up to this point as the Hand was wrong for how he approached finding out that Cersei's children were illegitimate heirs, and I don't know why he would tell Cersei or what, like, that she just thought she was gonna be on her merry way afterwards, just based on, like, just how she is as a person. So that's also a good point. I don't know. This is a tough one. It's between Catelyn and Ned for me right now, though.
Okay,
They both have just had a very rough time.
LT, do you have, who are you thinking?
I mean, I'm having a difficult time with this one. I probably would be leaning, I guess, more toward Ned, because you think that even though he is, you know, in the black cells for treason, that it's possible that he could just lie and
he could do what Sansa is telling him to do.
Swear his allegiance and just go back north. But he's so pigheaded about his honor and honoring the memory of his friend and all that stuff that gets you killed. But you know, he's even said he does it to the extent that it seems like he doesn't value his life and is being reckless with it, that he's not afraid to die. But, you know, that's not how I feel about it. So I'd probably say Ned Stark.
Yeah, I also hate when players in Survivor say they're playing with honor and integrity. So Ned is the just epitome of every Survivor player I don't like. So, it's hard. It's a hard one. I'll say Catelyn, too.
Catelyn, yeah.
Catelyn's
a good one.
Yeah, first point on the board, Ned's really running up a... he's got a good run here. Yeah.
There's really just nothing more embarrassing than getting shown up by your sister that's breastfeeding their preteen child. Like that was an embarrassing. I hope Catelyn really thought about that for a while. You know, that was embarrassing for her.
Mm. That's true. Yeah. All right. What about MVPs? Josh and I had the same person. It's really hard not to think that this isn't the Cereal Pharrell episode. He's so good. I think Barristan you could give too as well. He has a pretty badass exit, but Cyril Pharrell, like, fighting off all the Kingsguard with a wooden sword
is
pretty good. It's pretty rad.
Yeah.
I wish we got him to reappear in future seasons, or if that would have been, or even just like a mention of him or something. Like, I think Arya does mention him again at some point, but it would have just been really, I'm sad that we never see him again or really get like any, like, you know, closure. A picture of, yeah, like any
his head, not one of the heads on the spikes.
Oh,
I don't remember seeing
that. Feels
it.
Like all the people who were like, Cyril Farrell's not dead would be like, people would have pointed out that.
Yeah.
I mean, they put George Bush's head up there.
That's true.
They totally did. Not making that up.
LT, who's your MVP?
My MVP?
Yeah.
For Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
This is a tough one. There's an argument to be made for Jon for getting rid of the White Walkers, smashing them the way that he did. There's always the argument to be made for Tyrion, but I don't want to be boring.
Always, every week. Tyrion's good. He. That's very much like that could have been the end of Tyrion running into a hill giant crew.
Yeah,
a hill giant crew.
Yeah. With only Bronn there as backup, but he was able to talk his way out of it.
John almost like kills who's the bad guy's name who eventually becomes the commander of the Night's Watch. He like almost stabs him. I feel like it's a bad episode for.
Yeah, it's not a great episode for John.
I mean, that guy does suck,
right?
But you know,
maybe Robb Stark, because he's able to wield power without doing much of anything. He just lets his wolf do the work.
Also, it's Alistair Thorne before people come at me.
Thank you. Yeah. he's young, but he is a pretty brilliant tactician in terms of war strategy. And, you know, letting the spy go back and like, you know, tell the Lannisters some bad information. So maybe because I'm not going to have the opportunity to do it very much in the series. Maybe I'll go with Robb Stark.
Yeah, it's a good call. Okay. Gia, what about you?
I can't in good conscience give it to Robb because he is just an extension of Catelyn and Ned and like the honor. And he would also try to play Survivor with honor and integrity. And I am having none of that in my Game of Thrones, you know.
Gia hates honor and integrity, everybody.
I hate it. I hope the RHAP out of context quotes you on that. Gia hates honor and integrity. I hate both, but particularly together. It's just like, why? Anyway, I do, part of me does, before we started this podcast and really like went into depth with everything, I was thinking to give Tyrion the MVP because I think this is one of my favorite portions of it. Tyrion's one of my favorite characters. This is really a great Tyrion episode. And as we said, the mountain, is it the hill people or the mountain people?
The hill tribe
is also like such a great interaction and great unlikely, you know, rowdy
Alliance.
Bunch of rascals all together to fight. You know, to fight with Tyrion, and the fact that they pull Tyrion in is like he has to fight with us in order for us to be okay with it. It was just great all around. But for my continuity purposes, I will just have to get it. Can you write down that I want to give MVP to Barristan Selmy / Granddad Joe? I want both of them to be my MVP.
Yeah, I definitely can.
Yes.
Next week, Josh is going to be like, who the hell is Grandpa Joe?
Good pick. I believe, though, officially, people have done half points. So I think it has to go a half point to Barristan Selmy and a half point to Grandpa Joe.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. I'll accept it.
All right. Nobody surpasses Tyrion on the top of that board. Ned Stark reigning supreme at the top of the Game of Thrones LVP. Rhaenyra still top of the House of the Dragon MVP. Viserys, I don't actually know how this works. Josh will have to conclude this later. Viserys had -4 LVP points, but then got 2 LVP or MVP points. So is he at, what is his score? You know, I think Josh will have to clarify.
Yeah.
Next
negative week. We'll 2.
See. Is Kristen at the top of, that's what I think, but is Kristen at the top of the LVP chart without even basically doing anything this episode.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we got to talk about how Vaemond got sliced in half before the end of this episode. We almost went the full thing without doing that, which is hilarious to me. We're professional podcasters, folks.
Oh, yeah.
Gia, this was so fun. Thanks for coming on.
I had such a great time, and it felt really good to not just podcast with both of you, who I adore, but also the fact that I was able to talk about a show that I really haven't gotten into in a very long time and give me an incentive to get back to the good old days for it. So thank you both for offering to come on with me.
I thought some really fun Game of Thrones takes that I haven't heard often, just being like, all these people are boring. Danny sucks. Like, that's hilarious. Like,
yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I am professional podcaster / professional hater of everyone's face.
Amazing. Well, what else do you have going on, Gia?
Oh my God, I have so much going on right now, but like all fun things. So also
nothing with honor or integrity though.
There is no honor or integrity to be found on any of my podcasts. So just, you know, for those, if you like that, you should give it a listen. Speaking of which, very important. Also on post-show recap, Chappelle and I are recapping Abbott Elementary. We're doing one episode every 2 weeks. So we're taking a break this week, but we're going to be covering episodes 4 and 5 next week. And it's season 2 has been fantastic so far. So I'm really excited to see where it goes from here. So make sure to take a listen to that and give us lots of stars ratings and comment about how amazing we both are, particularly me and, you know, my love of Ava Coleman. So also a character with no honor and integrity. So, you know, it's just like the continuing theme here. We love Ava. And then over on Silent Podcast, I am doing the recaps for Survivor 43 over there on my podcast. I don't know about that. We're going to have to get both Grace and LaTanya on the podcast at some point. Yeah. So I'm very excited. This, you know, I'm very disappointed about the amount of women that are getting voted out on Survivor 43, but it is making for some very humorous podcast episodes. So we're going to just keep the ball rolling with that and keep it positive while we can. Also on a Silent Podcast, I am recapping Claim to Fame with my sister Ariana. So my sister has not been caught up on Claim to Fame. She is not spoiled, and I am. So we're doing a spoiler-free recap podcast where Ari is watching the episodes one at a time, and we're doing recaps and see where she can if she can figure out different contestants' Claim to Fame and get her takes on everything. And it's been really fun so far. And then finally, I'm doing the recaps on Inside Survivor with Christine Palin. We're doing all of the roundups for Survivor 43, and it's been really fun so far. So keep an eye out for those if you want something light to read about what we have seen so far of Survivor 43.
Amazing. LT, what about you?
Got a lot going on right now. You can always find me here. Well, only, I guess, for a couple more episodes, which is really sad.
Two more, I know.
I don't know what I'm going to do with myself or my life, honestly, after these 2 weeks are over. But I'll have an existential crisis later. I'm doing my plugs now.
I just like to quickly shout out Dr. Amanda, who all of our three tweets came up in a row for Dr. Amanda. So it's just three tweets of indistinct chatter. So just shout out to Dr. Amanda.
Shout out to Dr. Amanda. That's right. So you can find me each week on the Andor podcast with DM Philly and Brendan Fitzpatrick. We are having a hell of a time recapping a really great show that isn't getting as much hype as it should be. Honestly, the best Star Wars content that maybe I've ever seen. Just gonna put that out there for folks. Chappelle and Mari and I are also covering Atlanta. It's the final season, so catch up and then you'll have time to listen to our podcast. And Ariel and I are doing work. We're watching the entire, as Netflix will call it, Flaniverse. I won't call it that because it reminds me of Ned Flanders. but we're watching the Michael
Imagine Landon. He showed up in any of those shows.
I know, right? Just like shirtless.
Moving into the blind man. It's like, howdy ho, Namorino. You know, that'd be great.
Yeah. We just got done last week with The Haunting of Hill House. So we're moving on this week to The Haunting of Bly Manor, all to culminate in our coverage of The Midnight Club, which should be released on Halloween because it's the spookiest of seasons. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be popping up here and there on the post-show recaps theater as well.
Yeah.
With you, Grace.
Halloween ends.
Yeah.
It's a it's, there's no more Halloween after this
There's no more Halloween. Just this one.
That's right.
You can follow me on Instagram at Stormborn1222, which is a shout out to Daenerys Targaryen.
That's right.
As well as my own personage. And you can find me on Twitter, chattering indistinctly, at LK Starks.
Amazing. Yes, we are covering Halloween Ends this week on Post Show Recaps Theater. I believe we'll also be covering Triangle of Sadness. So that should be fun. I'm also covering Interview with the Vampire each week with DM Philly. Typically, you can catch me on the House of the Dragon recap pod on Sunday nights with Mike Bloom. We'll have another guest this Sunday. Looking forward to that. Then, of course, you can catch the book club pods on Monday with Philly, Taryn, and Mari. Rob and Josh get together to chat each week. And a week from now, I believe Josh will be back with you, LT, and perhaps another special guest. Yeah, over on Rob is a Podcast, I have Roll Call, a board game show. I invite some friends, the two of you. Hopefully we'll be on at some point soon. We'll play different board games each month. We played Settlers of Catan. We played the Game of Thrones board game. If it's any interest to you, you can watch a replay on YouTube or Twitch. This later this month, we're going to be playing Clue. So I'm very excited. I have a great.
Oh my God.
Oh,
yeah. I love the movie and the board game.
Flames on the side of our face, Gia. It's going to be great. Yes. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. Thanks for hanging out with us. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on the House of the Dragon feed and post your recaps. That would be much appreciated. Until next week, bye-bye.
Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.